Hi, I'm Neil Carter from Mogg's Motel, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
I can't afford to be. This is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away. A song away. A song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room promote the new album, Mogg's Motel. Please welcome multi-instrumentalist and former member of UFO, Mr. Neil Carter. Hey, Neil.
Hey, man. How are you doing? All right.
I am good. Where are you located at right now?
I live in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean in a place called Lanzarote, which is in the Canary Islands. So I'm speaking to you from a very, very long way away. So yeah, so it's about 4 hours south of England. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's always sunny. The sun always shines. A bit like California.
And how long have you made your home there?
Actually, well, 10 years now. We've been living here 10 years. We had a place here before, and we just decided that we were going to leave. I left. I was teaching for a long time, and I decided I was going to leave teaching, and we both of us were going to stop work before it killed us, and we were going to come down here and retire. So I've been retired. I mean, I'm only 66, but I've been retired 11 years now, nearly.
11 years retired from teaching, but the music still continues.
No, that never leaves you. No, that's right. It's a bad choice of words there. But I had retired until UFO came knocking on the door and asking me to come and finish the tour for them. So, yeah.
Yeah, that was in April of 2019. We lost UFO's Paul Raymond.
Yeah.
And you were invited back to fill on keyboards and guitar and vocals and help the band finish the Last Orders tour, which I was able to see in Anaheim.
What's it from Metallica? I can't remember. Kirk from Metallica.
Yes, and you guys killed it. Oh, my God. I was my favorite era of UFO is the Paul Chapman era, which includes you for most of that. And I was so excited sad that Paul had passed, obviously, but knowing that you were coming back to fill the slot just gave me as a UFO fan, just so exciting to see you back on stage.
Yeah, I know. It was a very, very shocking thing for the band. I mean, the UFO has been through so many different lineups, good, bad, you know, in different times, you know. Really, I mean, Paul going at that point was extremely sad because, you know, they were on the final run, you know. But I suppose being them, they didn't want to disappoint anyone. So I'm glad. I was flattered they asked me. I mean, I had said goodbye. I didn't even own a guitar, so I had no guitars. I had nothing. I had to go and buy one from a guy down in one of the bars down in one of the resorts here. And I just hadn't played it for 10, 11 years since I was last with Gary. I did a little bit with Gary Moore. But so it was I just had to sort of get playing and, you know, sort of remind myself. Muscle memory is a very good thing, though. It was so easy, you know, it was so easy. But it was a bit of a shock, to be honest, but shock to the system.
Well, you stepped in perfectly, and you guys just were amazing that night. Now,
thank you.
Here's my question. As far as the Last Orders tour goes, I really was expecting that the follow-up after the tour would be a UFO live album. Do you have any idea if that's going to happen, a Last Orders live album?
No, I don't think it is, unfortunately. We never... it was, you know, we were suggesting it. Andy and I and Vinny were quite keen on the idea of doing a live album. But it's a funny thing with Phil, you know, he does, I think he's earned the right to do what he wants, and he didn't really want to do one, you know, so, which is fine. I mean, I said to him, why don't we do a video? But it's, you know, it's almost like, you know, I think really he was trying to wind it up. And I think from that point of view, he deserves all, you know, every single ounce of respect for that, you know. And I got it, you know. Unfortunately, I came into it and loved it and was so upset because we lost, you know, but obviously we lost a lot of ground because of the pandemic.
Yes,
for and, sure. Yeah, and then poor Phil with his heart. And, you know, to be honest, it was really cruel for me because I just got into it and I thought, God, I really missed this. You know, I really had missed the band, you know, because we always all, you know, apart from, you know, certain things went a bit haywire at certain points, but really it was, it's always the humour of UFO that has endured, you know. And I just missed it. I'd forgotten how much I would, how fond I was of, particularly Andy and Phil. I'd forgotten, you know. So it was a great experience, but it was a bit bittersweet because I would have loved to have carried on and done some more, you know.
Well, you are carrying on with Mr. Phil Mogg.
Carrying on, yes.
With Mogg's Motel. So, now, this is credited. Now, initially, I thought that the band was called Mogg's Motel, but I have the CD in my hand. It says Phil Mogg, Mogg's Motel. So
yeah,
this is a Phil Mogg solo album.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether the one over, because the one in America is different to the one in the UK.
Yes.
So I'm not altogether sure what it says on the, I haven't actually looked at it, to be honest, but I've looked through it, but I haven't actually looked at the binding. I mean, what they tend to do is bill it to give it some traction, to say Phil Mogg of,
right,
you know, of UFO, you know. I think it says that on the Cleopatra release, but I'm not altogether sure it does on the European one. I might be wrong. So, I'll have to have a look.
So in other territories, Mogg's Motel might be the name of the band.
Yeah, it's the generic name for this project. Yeah.
All right.
So it was always going to be a side project, well, a different shaped project for Phil, you know. I know that. And it just happened that because I think I feel included, because, you know, I was very much new to it, although I hadn't been new to it, but I was rediscovering it, you know. So and Phil and I had always worked well, you know. We had always worked well, you know. I mean, regardless of all the things that happened within the history of UFO, he and I was got on well, and you know, it sort of wrote well together, you know. We sort of understood each other. So yeah, it's been a great process. It's been a fantastic process to do.
Well, the album is fantastic. Phil is in great voice. The band sounds amazing. And you co-wrote four songs with Phil on the album. You wrote six, but you co-wrote four with Phil.
Yeah.
And when you and Phil write together, are you doing all the music and he's doing all the lyrics, or are you each doing a little bit of both?
No, I mean, there's one little bit on Princess Bride that I wrote lyrically, but actually Phil wrote all the lyrics and came up. And occasionally in the past, we've always said, you know, I've always said, well, I'll send you an idea for a melody, vocal melody. But, you know, Phil has a certain way of singing, and, you know, he's very good at all this stuff. You know, he's been doing it for so long that, you know, the lyrics, I mean, I try and write lyrics myself, and I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he keeps coming up with some great lyrics, and, you know, because it drives me around the bend. You know, I hate it, you know, trying to think of lyrics. I would tend to, what I've always done is sort of make the backing track and show where the solos go, show where he would be singing, and then it sort of works from there. And of course, we didn't see each other for quite a couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all done via, you know, sort of sending stuff, him sending it back to me, having a chat, you know. So but I must say that Tony Newton deserves so much credit for this album. You know, he really does. He's been the mastermind, really, of it, you know. So I feel I've done my bit, but Tony's done such a lot, you know, for it, and produced it brilliantly as well. But his songwriting is good as well, you know, so it's really, really good.
Yeah, and Tony also had a hand in writing the song you just mentioned, The Princess Bride.
This is not a circus ride.
Yeah, that's right. Tony came up with the original riff on the chorus, and then I sort of took it and tried to make it into an epic. So we had the slight. My partner says to me, "Oh, it sounds like Gary Moore that bit," you know. But it's actually the beginning of it, and the string arrangements and the segue into the next track was all stuff that I came up with. You know, so it's manic. It's a manic track. It's a bit like Sunny Side of Heaven. That, you know, you when we did the video, we kept getting to the end of it, and I kept saying to the drummer Joe, I kept saying, do you know, this track is bonkers, it's mad, you know, like you get to the end and she's wailing away and it's got the guitar wailing away, and you know, I absolutely love that sort of thing. I love that freedom to just make a racket, you know.
Yeah, and some amazing female backing vocals on that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah,
it's killer. Absolutely.
And now a word from our sponsors.
Hey, Rock Solid people, it's Pat Francis, and I'm here to tell you that Gin Blossoms are at the Sagebrush Cantina in Calabasas on Saturday, October 19th. A night of hits and career-spanning music with Gin Blossoms, plus special guests. Wait till you hear this. Fastball, Allison Porter, Season 10 winner of NBC's The Voice, and Chris Stills. Get ready to experience the iconic sound of Gin Blossoms as they take the stage for their only 2024 LA appearance at the Sagebrush Cantina in Calabasas. Will I be there? You bet I will be. So, if you want to be there, grab the few remaining tickets before they're all gone at sagebrushtickets.com. Thanks.
Now, back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, actually, really, looking at the tracks that I co-wrote, apart from Storybuild, that most of the tracks I co-wrote have actually got her on it. So I like it. I like it as a change. You know, I like the whole idea of it, you know. And of course it was weird because I've ended up doing more lead guitar than I've ever done for 40 something years, you know. So that was just really by almost like me saying, well, this is where the guitar goes. I'll put a solo in. And then we ended up just using the stuff that I'd done, you know. But and it's good because Tommy's more of a technical guitar player, whereas I am sort of the Mick Ronson school of, you know, guitar playing, you know, that it's a lot of, hopefully a lot of feel and a lot of wail and simplicity, which is what I like. You know, so.
Let's give a shout out real quick to everyone on the album. Tony Newton, yeah. Bass and guitars, Tommy Gentry guitars, Joe Lazarus drums, and backing vocals are Zoe Devlin Love and Laurie Mansworth.
Yeah, I'm not altogether sure what Laurie did. I think most of them. I think he did a bit on whichever one it is, Wrong House. But the majority of the other ones were myself and Zoe. So
So Laurie is a man.
I think so. Yes. Okay. All right. I've never met him. So
okay. Okay. Just to clarify.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably going to get lots of people commenting on this point, but I don't actually know. I don't know him. So, but I think he's a friend of Tony's, and I think that's what happened. He brought him in to do some bits and pieces because I'd done a lot, and it's just again, it's another texture, another sound. It's, you know, it's sort of I think I'm on it, and he's on it as well. So the majority of it was done in this little studio, my little studio here, and sent over, you know. So I had great fun with it, you know.
Nice. Yeah. So there are two instrumentals on the album, Harry's Place. Yeah. You play flute on Harry's Place.
I do. Yes, it's actually, I'm glad people, when they've reviewed it or talked about Harry's Place, that they realise that it's an ironic track. You know, it's actually a bit like Phil sent me. It's amazing what Phil comes up with. Phil sent me the beginning of the film Bullet, And he said, wouldn't it be good to have something a bit like this, you know, a real catalyst for ideas? And of course, the worst thing is to say something like that to me, because I'll immediately go away and, you know, I'll go over top. And so Tony came up with the two-bar bass riff, and then I just threw the rest of it together. So, yeah, the flute is, I mean, I play the flute. I've played the flute throughout my life, yeah. But I don't think I've ever played it in front of, you know, a rock audience before. So, but it is meant to be ironic. It's an ironic track to take you into Wrong House, which is like, you know, a little sort of, but like detective-y type, yes, menacing thing. So I think it works.
Oh, it does work. It's definitely a nice interlude into the Wrong House.
I did a lot of jazz with when I was teaching. I did a lot of jazz saxophone with people, and I had my own big band, several big bands actually, with it throughout my time with the school. So I did a lot of that stuff. Have you ever heard Paul Anka's album called Rock Swings?
Because he I did have not. No, but I do know who Paul Anka is, though.
Yeah, well, Paul Anka did like versions of Jump.
Oh, can't you see me standing here? I got my back against the record machine. I ain't the worst that you've seen. Can't you see what I mean? Might as well jump.
Jump.
Might as well jump.
Jump.
Go ahead, jump.
Jump.
Go ahead and jump.
Jump. Hey, you.
Hey, babe, how you been? You say you don't know, you don't know, until you begin.
And I mean, other things, you know, but I've always liked that big band approach, that sort of, but this is different. This is like real 60s into the 70s, cool. The idea was cool jazz. In fact, I actually wanted to make it mono and then have it open out into the thing. But as it was, we did it. But I could imagine it being like really sort of close and then coming into the track, you know.
So with Phil, you feel comfortable to throw out your ideas?
Yeah. I mean, you can always say no. I mean, I bless him. I know. No, I think we're generally on the same page, and he and Tony work really, really well together, you know. So, and when we all got together to do the videos, we really gelled as people, you know, which is nice. You know, it's a completely different thing. I've not been in a band like that for so long, you know, in the genesis of it, you know. So, yes. So it's been, it's been very, very nice, very enjoyable to do, really, really enjoyable. And to send back Taylor's Wood. So again, that was something that Tony had, and then I threw guitars all over it and whatever. So it was just, we needed an extra track for the USA. So it's not on the European release.
Yes. So Taylor's Woods, we get an additional bonus track, which is also an instrumental that closes out the album.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's a nice sort of ending.
It is.
Yeah.
It was interesting to me that there are the bonus track is an instrumental on, because Phil, obviously, then he's not a part of that.
No, it is a bit strange. It actually comes, I think, I can't remember which track it comes from, but it's actually part of one of the other tracks, which has obviously got a vocal on it. And we were going to try and, it's a question of just, I'd say just time management, all that sort of thing. But we just realized we needed an extra track for the USA. So it would probably be a lot simpler for us to do it and not spend too long put the vocal on it. And also it comes after Storyville, which Storyville's quite a sort of quiet track. And, you know, so there's all sorts of reasons behind it. But I like it. It's quite good, you know. So I like playing the lead on it. I enjoy playing the lead. And on Storyville, I really, really enjoy playing that lead, you know, lead play stuff, you know, because it's very different from me. Very, very different.
Yeah, Storyville is fantastic. The lyrics are great. And Phil's voice is just amazing on that track as well.
Yeah.
What you gotta lose? Take a look at my wife. She's a crazy slice. Oh, if I had met you, where would I be? Sleeping in the park under a shady tree. If I had known you, there's a possibility. If would be the only word between you and me in Storyville.
I actually joke with him because Dave Gilmore from Pink Floyd lives in Brighton, and Phil's just near Brighton. And I said to him, "Look, Phil, you should get, you know, chat to Dave Gilmore, get Dave Gilmore to play on this." But and then I did my bit, and I think he was happy with that. He didn't really want to, you know. But it would have been quite nice to actually have dragged Dave Gilmore, who suited him that track, I think.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
So look, Phil Mogg, I just want people to know he's for me so underrated as a lyricist and a vocalist. Mm. And even here in America, the UFO always had the fan base, but still under the radar. Like if I bring UFO up to some people, they might not know who it is. And that really is disappointing for me because I'm a huge fan of the band.
Oh, thank you. It's one of those really weird things. There's about a book, and the subtitle is something like your band's favorite band. And they about UFO, your band's favorite band. And it's like people, your favorite band, something like that. And it's like people like Metallica and, you know, Iron Maiden and all these people that used to, you know, sort of follow UFO before I was in it, you know, with the Michael years and all that sort of thing. So I think, I don't know. It's very difficult to say underrated. I never quite get that in a way, well, especially with Phil, because I think Phil just carries on his ploughs his own furrow,
yeah,
if you know what I mean. So therefore to Phil it wouldn't matter to him if he was rated or underrated, you know. You just do what you do, and I think you do, and particularly with this album, we've actually, all of us have done what we enjoyed, so it never had a plan, you know, because it's been done over a certain amount of years, you know.
Yeah.
So there was no plan, there was no pressure, there was no anything whatsoever, really. We just did what we enjoyed, you know. So, and, you know, if they wanted some backing vocals, throw it to me and I'll do it, you know, from this, that and the other. Well, you know, it's good to make music in that way is fantastic, because you don't have any pressure on you to do it. You know, unlike the years with UFO where, you know, we had to finish the tour, then next week you got to start the album. You know, it was never, there wasn't any sort of pressure like that. And that's how it sounds so fresh and good. You know?
Yeah. Your recorded career with UFO is 81, 82, 83, tour, tour, tour. So the first time I was ever introduced to UFO was February 16th, 1981, at the Pittsburgh Civic Arena, when you guys opened for Cheap Trick.
Yes. So yes, likely. Yes.
So yeah. Cheap Trick is my favorite band of all time. That was the first time I was ever seeing them live. I had no idea what a UFO was. I had no idea.
Right.
The lights go down, then the lights come up, you guys hit the stage, and from the first note, Neil, I'm a lifelong fan. From that performance, I was like, my friend Jim and I, we were looking at each other like, who is this band? What is this? We'll be right back. And then I love the album, The Wild, the Willing, and the Innocent. It's probably in my top two favorite UFO albums. And we just went then and bought that album and then bought everything backward and then forward. Like ever since, I've never missed the band. I'm just, I mean, they mean so much to me, this band.
Yeah, that's very touching. Yeah, that's very nice and touching. I think there is such a good, you know, problem is it's like what you include when you're playing a set, what you put in, what you leave out. And, you know, I mean, actually, I think we were doing things like Lonely Heart and Sometimes and The Wild, the Willing, Making Moves, which has endured all the way through to we were doing it in 2019.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot from that because that is a very good album.
We're going to play something on a new album. This is something called Making Moves.
It's a shame we never got to play Profession of Violence live because I think that was such a brilliant track.
Yeah.
Hey, babe, what we gonna do? No look behind me glances. Straight time. This time we'll take our chances. Darling, it's been so long. Every lonely hour. Lord, the sinner pulls the trigger and the world turns sour. Whisper on the wind, locked in silence. Profession of violence.
And I like, in fact, you know, certain things we were referencing, you know, the string segue between, don't know which one, possibly, but that goes into The Wild, the Willing, and the Innocent. Anyway, there's an actual string, really beautifully done string arrangement. And so we were sort of slightly referencing that in on this album with The Princess Bride into whatever. So, yeah, I mean, for me, as a little young person at the time, because I was only, oh, was I 23, but extremely young and not really cut my rock teeth yet, doing that tour was incredible for me. I because I've had an obsession with the USA ever since I was about 6 or 7, and although I'd been to the States once before, I'd been to LA and to see friends, I had never toured the States before. So that was the beginning of that tour, wasn't it? Pittsburgh must have been fairly soon after the start, because I think we did a British tour and then we went to the States. So yes. I was in wonderment at that point. I just thought, I used to stand watching Cheap Trick from the side of the stage and see they did what, I can't remember which one of the ones, where is it Heaven Tonight or something like that, and then they put the lights on the audience, and I'd never seen that before. I'd never seen anything, and it was like, it was electric watching Cheap Trick. So I'm glad that you felt like that about watching this, because it was just such a blast, that tour. It really was. It was just, for me, it was just incredible, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, you guys just, you rocked from the moment you hit the stage. And I was just like, and you had the big long hair, and you guys are just, the hair is everywhere. And it's one of my favorite songs on The Wild, the Willing, and the Innocent is Lonely Heart. And you have an amazing sax solo on there. So.
Yeah, I do have the sax on that one. Yes, I do. I think that worked pretty well. Funnily enough, I hadn't listened to Mechanics in a long time. And there was always this big thing about the sax on Mechanics, particularly on Something Else. And I hadn't listened to it. And Pete used to say it sounded, have you heard a band called Shawadi Wadi, a British band called Shawadi Wadi?
I do not know.
No, well, they don't, whatever, don't go there. But they were big in the sort of 70s and in England. They were pop band, you know, and they were like Teddy Boys, you know, they had the like the suits and the, you know, the sort of special shoes they used to wear. But they were a bit pop, and Pete said he hated it because it sounded like Shawadi Wadi. And I was listening to it. I was listening to it yesterday, and I thought, oh my God, it's, you know, it's not my favorite one of the tracks, you know. But Lonely Heart with the sax on it, I think, works really quite nicely. It does. You know, I know people were a bit divided about saxophone, but for me, it worked. I think it worked really well. And had I understood, I didn't understand saxophone particularly then, but we all liked Aerosmith. And we used to go on to a track, Chiquita by Aerosmith. And Pete loved that track. And I thought that was what I was going for on the writer. I wanted it to sound a bit like the saxes on, you know, the horns on Chiquita, you know, because I always loved the way they use them. But again, I didn't really understand it in as well as I should have done. So it doesn't come out sounding quite how I had it in my head, which is a shame. But the writer's got saxes on it as well, which is, you know, but not everyone's cup of tea. Not everyone's cup of tea.
Right. So it's funny you bring up Chiquita. That's on an album called Night in the Ruts, which was produced by Gary Lyons, who produces Mechanics.
Yes, I know. Yeah. No, it's incredible, really. And actually, like I said, that was the, and when I listen to Chiquita, I think, ah, damn it, it should have been a tenor, and, you know, as opposed to an alto. I should have played tenor sax on that. You should, because the idea was to make it sound a little bit, you know, Aerosmithy in my mind anyway at the time. But yeah, it was, no, it was a shame, but Lonely Heart, I think, works fine for that, you know, and it's a great song. It's a really, really good song.
Yeah.
So very strong, those songs on that album. Very, very strong indeed, you know.
So 1982 Mechanics, you're a full-fledged member now. You have 6 co-writes on the album, including some of my favorites, like We Belong to the Night is just killer.
Yeah, it's a pretty rocking tune, that one. Yeah, again, you know what's funny? Again, you know, do you know that Queen have just remixed Queen One?
Yes, I just read about that.
And funny enough, I was thinking, God, I'd love to go back in and redo Mechanics a little bit. You know, like, you know, you think what you imagine you could have done with it now, you know, without all the extra, you know, like the Mellotrons and, the, you know, all the things that we put on it that perhaps to some people make it great. But I think, wow, you could just strip it back and make it, you know, a rock, you know, more rocking and whatever. But, you know, I the things like We Belong to the Night and Let It Rain, they're quite catchy, you know, they're catchy things. Yeah. And there's some rockers in there to satisfy people and whatever.
Yeah, there was stuff on that album for everyone, for sure.
Yeah. And there was a little bit of pressure to come up with a radio-friendly song, you know. So I think, you know, again, you've got Back Into My Life, which really, you know, it's UFO because Phil's on it, and but it's not particularly UFO if you listen to it as a song, you know. I like the writer. I think the writer's got a great, you know, got a great hook, and it's, you know, that works really, really well. And yeah, there's a few on Dreaming, which, you know, I wrote with Phil, which I like a lot because that's, you know, it's got a good rock thing going on. You know, it's a harder rock song. Yeah.
Let me ask you about how is Phil doing health wise right now?
Oh, he's in the pink. Yes, he's fine. Yes, good. He it was a bit. It was a shock to him because I don't think he ever thought that. I think of all the things that, because he's very trim, you know, and he's very fit as a person, I think he didn't think that would be the thing that would be his thing that would slow him up, you know.
Yeah.
But they, you know, he went on the bus to the accident and emergency in Brighton, typical Phil, and thought nothing of it, you know. And of course, then he had to have stents put in, you know. So, and this rehabilitation, which meant that we couldn't do the final dates, you know. But I think it's, I think, to be honest, you know, it's been sort of like, it's rejuvenated him, because he's now, his singing on this album is just, he's hitting notes. I don't think he realizes that he has, you know, so that from that point of view, it's done him a, you know, a lot of good. I thought myself, I could tell he was not you know, I don't know where I'm putting it really, but you know, he wasn't feeling as good as on that final tour we did, as he had done in the past, you know, so unaware of his sort of, you know, slight frailty sometimes, you know, so he's really back to form now. He's, you know, really, really good, you know. So.
And that is the thing that I always noticed about Phil. He was always fit and trim and looked just great.
He still does, you know, he still looks brilliant, you know. I mean, he's coming up to 77 next April. Yeah. And you know, there's no stopping him, you know. He's a different animal to the one that I worked with back in the early 80s. And he you know, he was a bit of an angry young man back then, but now he's just funny. He's just a funny. I have never laughed so much in my life as Guy did on that final UFO tour. I mean, really, seriously, it was just wonderful. You know, they are such nice people. You know, so and to work with people I didn't know, like Vinny and Rob. You know, they're nice people. They're really good people. You know, so it was a great family atmosphere in the band. You know.
Now, I just finished a couple weeks ago. I read Pete Way's autobiography.
Right.
I mean, it was one of the most intense rock autobiographies I ever read. I mean, I was saddened and amazed how long he actually did live. I mean, what was it like touring with Pete Way? Was all that stuff off stage and you never really saw that side of him?
I saw quite a lot of that.
Okay.
I mean, bless his heart. Pete was a, you know, real one of rock's characters. You know, he really was. And although, you know, he cites my input into the band as one of the reasons he left, I don't have it. There was no animosity between us, you know, at all. I mean, I think it was, you know, we're all there. We all can say what we want, you know, but I think there were a lot of things he didn't like, which is fine, you know, I mean, I understand that. I was very fond of Pete. Very, very fond of Pete. And very sad. I read little bits of that, you know, autobiography, and you know, I just thought if some of it was slightly not quite the truth, but that was Pete. You know, Pete, you wouldn't want it to be any other way, really. You know, he was, you know, even Joe Elliott says something about, you know, like his way of the truth doesn't quite always, you know, tally with the reality.
Right.
You know? But I mean, who'd want anything different? He's just he was a fantastic man. You know, I was very fond of him. And we did get to see him. He was playing at Sweden Rock Festival, which we did in 2019. And we were on the same day and almost at the same hour, actually, with his band. And then we played, you know, and it was just lovely to see him. You know, it really was, you know, and he wasn't looking so hot. You know, he wasn't, I think the time, things had taken their toll on people.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
But, But I think the biggest surprise was Paul Chapman, because Paul was indestructible, we thought. And it was such a shame how he went, how he did. And also on his birthday, which is not, I mean, maybe it's good to go out with a bang. I don't know. You know, there's no right and wrong for this, you know. You know, Paul was just such a character. I mean, they all were, you know, they Andy, you know, is beyond character sometimes, you know. So they all of them had their own individual character, which made it work so well and such a pleasure to do it, you know. So.
Well. And I'm still happy that you and Phil are still with us and strong and carrying on with new music.
We have a go. Yes, so, that's right. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Is there any plans for live dates for Mogg's Motel?
Right. Okay. It keeps being said, and it's not off the table by any stretch of the imagination. Just part of it is geography. And part of it is just availability. Now, the three people like Tony, Joe and Tommy, they're incredibly busy. I mean, Tony's touring with KK Downing in the States at the moment. And they just there's just endless dates, you know. So trying to get any time to do it is actually the hardest thing. I live in Canary Islands. Tommy lives in Stockholm, Phil lives in Brighton, you know, so it's just actually really just getting us all in the same place, you know, but it's not off the table. It'd be lovely to do it. Phil fancies some festivals and easy things, you know, because he doesn't want to be touring, you know, he doesn't want, and actually now on reflection, neither do I, you know, I don't really want to be going away for long tours. And, you know, I loved coming back to America. I loved interacting with the crowds wherever we went. But I can't, it's the, all the bit in between that I can't cope with nowadays, the tour bus and the journeys. And, yes, you know, although we do it in a nice way, I mean, Gary Moore made it a little bit easier because we always flew everywhere. We never had a tour bus. But with UFO, it's very much the tour bus because that's the psyche of the band, you know. But I realised, I remembered what I didn't like. I remembered all the things I loved, but I remembered what I didn't like, and that was these overnight journeys and all that. So I'm totally with Phil about the idea of not touring, but doing some dates would be really, really nice. It would be brilliant, yeah, you know. And, you know, do it while we're all still breathing, you know, it'd be nice, you know. So,
yeah, yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah, so it'd be nice to try and get something going. You know, really, and would be good.
And everyone, Mog's Motel is out right now. CD, sure, vinyl, yeah, digital download. Seek it out. Buy the album. Now, this is a silly question, I know, because we're promoting a brand new album. Do you think there'll be another Mog's Motel release down the line?
Ooh, I don't know. God, it took 5 years nearly to do this one. I think we could see what comes out. We'll see. I think Phil wanted to see how this was received, I've got to be honest, and before he committed to anything else. I mean, you know, Phil, you know, he's sort of like, it's a lot of work, you know, and I don't know. It's yeah, it would be very much up to Phil. I'm fine to do more. I mean, I'm 66. I mean, I'm not, you know, I've got a little, hopefully a few more years in the year. So I, you know, we could, you know, we could definitely, and all the others are chickens in comparison, you know. So, yeah. So, I mean, if Phil is up for it, then yes, there's no reason why not. You know, so, but again, it's just getting it started, getting it done, you know. Right. But I haven't actually mentioned anything of this to him, so it could, but I know Tony would be keen to do another one, but we just need to think about it, you know. But
yeah, we need to let this one get out there,
yeah, and let it settle, you know. I tell you what is good, Phil maintained we'd never done them, but in fact we had, but doing the videos was great because that gets a hell of a lot of traction on, yeah, the album, you know? And I did say to him, look, you know, if you don't want to do any more dates, you know, let's go and do a couple more videos in a few months' time to again give it a little bit more interest and traction, whatever, you know, because I'd happily do that. That would be really, really good. And then maybe next year if we get offered some dates, and that would be fab, you know. But I think the videos are brilliant, you know, really, really good. They look very exciting. And
how many videos do we have right now? I know there's one for Apple Pie.
Yeah, right? And one for Sunny Side of Heaven.
Okay. The first, yeah, two tracks on the album.
Yeah, the first two tracks. So, you know, you could theoretically do, I said to him, you know, that's maybe a story of, you know, with a different treatment and black and white and grainy and all that sort of thing. There's quite a few things you could do, you know. So, again, it's just really, it's just if he wants to do them. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. You know, it's up to him. It's, but I can, all I can do is encourage.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And Neil, are you working on any solo music projects? Are you doing
anything? I do have a lot of songs that I have never finished and never recorded properly. And with modern technology, I can get around to doing it. Funnily enough, in Lanzarote, there's a studio here that I could use if I wanted to do vocals and that sort of thing, you know. So, yes, it's a bit like the people say to you, have you ever thought of writing a book or you know, autobiography or whatever? You know, yes, it's just getting around to it, to do it, because I'm incredibly lazy when I'm at home. I need other people to work with. That's why it's been good doing this album, because I've had people to work with. You know, I'm much better in a band situation than I am on my own. I'm not fit to be allowed to be on my own to do things, you know. So but you never know. I mean, I have a lot of songs that I've never used, so
yeah.
So it would be quite fun, but I just need someone to come and keep me at the rear end. That'd be good.
And Neil, are you on social media? Where do you have a website? Where can we find you?
Right. Okay. Now, I did have a website. The website at the moment, because of Facebook and all this, I have a Neil Carter fan page on Facebook.
Okay.
I have my own page on Facebook, which has 5 grand people, 5K already. And I can't really go any further with it. But unfortunately, people keep dying, you know. So you do occasionally have, you know, spaces where you can put people, you know, accept people. So I have a long list of people wanting to become, you know. So I use that as my media platform, really.
Okay.
And I'm on Instagram as well, Neil Cat Lad. So I am on Instagram as well. So I put stuff on that. But the website has sort of gone by the board a little bit. I had it for years and years. So.
And give us your Instagram again.
Okay, so it's Neil Cat Lad. Okay. So it's NEILCATLAD, because I was cat judge and cat breeder. So,
oh, yeah, great.
Neil Catlad. Yeah.
So, all right. Neil Catlad on Instagram. I'm going to follow.
Yeah, you should. Catlad. I think that it was Lad when I was a much younger person, but so Catlad. Yeah.
All right. The only song we didn't talk about that you had a co-writing credit on is Tinker Tailor. Tell me a little bit about the creation of that song.
Okay, all right. Well, Tinker Tailor was an idea I had that I was sitting here fiddling around with, and it was a real stomper. And I just fancied doing a real stompy, you know, sort of real gritty track. And so that began its genesis, and Phil and I worked on where what we were going to put where. And then we got, I put the lead guitar on it, and it was my Mick Ronson moment. I nearly got the wah-wah pedal out, and I thought, no, contain yourself. So that was really good fun. It's got, you know, and it's got Zoe singing on it, you know, again, both of us are actually singing on it, you know, so I like it. It's one of those things that a lot of people have mentioned it, and in fact, in a way, it could have been one of those filler tracks, but in fact, it's become... People have said, you know, how much they like it. So, you know, it's good. It's very gratifying, you know. But yeah, so I got to relive my Mick Ronson things.
Like, yeah. The album sequenced great. It's got a nice flow. If you're missing the voice of UFO, Phil Mogg, please pick up Mogg's Motel. Neil Carter is all over this thing. And again, it's not UFO, but yeah. Man, is it great. It's such a great album.
Yeah, it was never intended to be anything other than what came out.
Right.
So therefore, you know, there was no, people say, oh, it's a bit like this, and a bit like that, and a bit like this album. But in fact, no, not at all. It was, the only constant is the fact you've got Phil singing. You know, it was never meant to be, and it would never have been a UFO album.
No.
So, and from that point of view, it's a fresh thing. And I like people to think of it in that way rather than, you know, go back to UFO all the time, because it's not, you know, not by any means.
All right. Now, Neil, this is the final question.
Okay.
I need a playout song for the episode. From any time in your career, it could be Wild Horses or Gary Moore or UFO or Mogg's Motel. What song do we use as our playout song?
Okay, right. Well, I suppose we're talking about UFO and Mogg's Motel. Should we take one from Mogg's Motel? That would be really, really good. And in fact, actually, possibly my favorite, which is Princess Bride. So
you got it. Everybody. Okay, right. Go check out Neil Carter on Facebook and Instagram. Thank you so much, Neil, for giving time today. Buy Mogg's Motel. And everyone, please enjoy The Prince's Bride. Thank you, Neil.
Okay, thank you then. Bye then.